You just tuned into the Dental Marketer Talks, hashtag TDM Talks podcast. I'm your host, Michael, coming at you with the latest episode. What's up, guys? I want you to see how many new patients you should be attracting weekly. So go below in the show notes. Click on the yellow button that says Download Free Report. Download it, and a PDF checklist will be sent your way. See if you are on track, ahead, or behind in your new patient flow. So go ahead and download the free report to get better insight on how many new patients should be coming in and an exact target your dental practice should be striving for. All right, everyone, it's time to talk with our wonderful guest, Debbie Zafiropoulos. Debbie is a tireless pioneer health crusader, educator, and author dedicated to total health initiatives and making oral cancer history. This passion drove Debbie to form the NationalCancerNetwork.org, an organization whose vision is to raise awareness of prevention, progress, screening, and referrals for a world free of cancer. With over 27 years in the health industry and working with a variety of clients, Debbie's laser focus and ability is to get to the cause holding you back and guide you to achieve remarkable success. Her mission and commitment is for you to ignite the hero within you. Debbie, thank you so much for being on the show. How's it going today?
Oh, it's fantastic. Thank you so much. I'm really honored to be part of the Dental Marketer podcast, and it's great to get to know about you as well, Michael.
Awesome. That's wonderful. Debbie, why don't you tell the Dental Marketer tribe a little bit about your past, present, and future, and how you got to where you are today?
Wow, that's a long journey to explain in a little bit of time, but I'll do my best.
All right.
I started in my dental career when I was about 7.5 years old, and it's a pretty funny story, but I'll make it real short. I'm the middle daughter of a Greek family, and I spent a lot of time with my grandmother, and she taught me how to cook, and one of the favorite things we like to do with each other is to make Greek cookies, and my grandfather had a bar. And so when he came home early in the morning, it was his time to sleep, and he would, you know, wake up in the afternoon. We'd all have lunch together, especially over the weekend. And my grandfather, he's probably going to be laughing in heaven while I say this, had dentures. And so I decided that I wanted to make him new teeth. And so I snuck upstairs and took his teeth out of the little cup and came downstairs and took my dough that my grandmother gave me and started to mold new teeth. And so the short story of that is just before my tray of ugly cookies were going into the oven, my grandfather woke up and called for my grandmother and was, you know, a little bit upset as to where his teeth were. Uh-huh. And so when my grandmother came down and saw the mound of dough placed on the cookie sheet, she realized what I had done. And so I truly believe that that's where my desire to be in the dental field and to be a tooth fairy started. And, you know, being mentored into my, you know, with my family, went the route of chairside assistant after school and was blessed enough to mentor and be mentored by a wonderful dentist in Philadelphia. And I just fell in love with the hygienist. I would listen to what she was saying to the patients, and, you know, the patients loved her. And I was like, wow, I want to be loved by like by patients. And she took me under her wing, and I think I went from sucking saliva into being a hygiene assistant, and decided after high school I wanted to go to school and became a dental assistant, expanded functions dental assistant, and then on to dental hygiene school, and kind of thought a little bit about going into dentistry, but I just love the interaction and the opportunity to educate patients about total health and wellness and see their results when they finally understood how important their involvement in between visits was to make what I did chairside and allow what doctor did chairside last that much longer. And I just fell in love with dental hygiene, and so I'm still the tooth fairy.
Awesome. That's amazing. And how did the National Cancer Network come about?
Well, the National Cancer Network came about similarly to probably how other people pivot in their careers. Either something good happened or something bad happened. And unfortunately, the secondary option was what happened. I grew up with a very dear friend of mine, one of my best friends, who was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer, which maybe some of your audience will identify as it's a very aggressive breast cancer that goes undetected until typically in stage 3 and 4. And my dear friend was taking a shower and felt something and went to the doctor and had a mammogram and was told that doesn't look like anything in particular, and came to visit me here in Florida, and she was telling me about it. And I said, well, you know, if they don't know exactly what it is, we need to continue to search out the answer, you know, because what things look like and what things feel like is not an accurate diagnosis. And so with my skill set in hygiene and my commitment to going to the why people have abnormalities, I convinced her to go and have a another thorough screening with a doctor that I knew in the area. And within 3 days, she was diagnosed with stage 4 triple negative breast cancer. And 3.5 days later, she was having a bilateral mastectomy and chemo and therapy and radiation and chemo and radiation, and really fought the fight and had a positive attitude. And we had a strong family, you know, to support her when she wasn't so happy about what was going on, and she beat it. You know, she landed up, you know, getting her Barbie boobs, like she said, and you know, was starting to, her hair was growing back, wanted to go back to school to start something different in her career, and moved away. And I was lecturing one day, and she called me and she said, I have something in the back of my tongue. It feels like a popcorn kernel stuck there. And I'm like, well, listen, you know, wash your hands thoroughly. If you don't have a pair of gloves on, get a clean washcloth and kind of feel back there and see what it feels like. And, you know, asked her all these questions that I was used to asking my patients when I saw something abnormal. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, you know, I don't know what it is. And I said, well, neither do I. So we need to get you to a doctor. And she said, you know, I'm going to have a dentist appointment tomorrow. I'll just ask them. And I said, well, listen, let's make that appointment tomorrow very, very succinct. I prefer you not have a procedure called a cleaning, and that's another topic we could get to. I hate the word cleaning, because dental hygienists don't go to the University of Mini-Maids. And so dentists don't go to the University of Reconstruction. They go to, you know, school. And unfortunately, the appointment didn't go as I had hoped. And the opportunity was missed to opt Lisa into care. And what they did was pretty much excuse away what they what she told them, because neither did the hygienist nor the dentist actually address the issue. In fact, the doctor didn't even put gloves on to do any type of examination. And unfortunately, well, fortunately for me, I was lecturing in Dallas and drove to Houston. And when I went and examined her, I actually palpated an area of concern. And when we found somebody to actually diagnose what was happening, she was already stage 4 oropharyngeal cancer. And her mindset had shifted, because she knows what I talk about. She knows the pictures that are in my program. She knows, had already experienced chemo and radiation and what it did to her body. But her whole concern really wasn't of her. Her concern was, you know, how are my parents going to, you know, help me go through this? They're they're older, you know, you know, I have to have my tongue removed. I have to have a portion of my, you know, neck dissected. And just so, she decided what her exit strategy would be, because she didn't want to go through what needed to be done. And, to answer your question, that's why I started the National Cancer Network, because I don't want families to have to experience something like that. I want to use what I've learned in my career and pull together professionals who have the same passion to save people, to educate people, and to understand that we have the ability as healthcare providers, regardless if we're in dentistry or, if we're hairstylists or estheticians or just people, if we see something that is abnormal, if we see something that's lasting in our body that's symptomatic for over a two-week period of time, we need to go ahead and find somebody that will get to the cause of the problem, not just look at something as being symptomatic. Mm-hmm. And so in her honor and in my commitment to reduce late-stage diagnoses of abnormalities that could potentially turn into cancer, the National Cancer Network was formed, and our mission is to raise awareness on prevention through communication and education, mm-hmm. progress through the integration of technology, screening, which is to train people to offer screenings that do not focus in on looking for cancer, because another commitment of mine is understanding that I don't know what cancer looks like. In my opinion, in those air quotes, Michael, is I may know what cancer looks like by looking at a picture in my pathology book, but if I'm looking in a patient's mouth, my responsibility to my patient isn't to find cancer or to look for cancer. My responsibility to my patient, my commitment to my patient, my commitment to educating people how to do this through my programs is to train to look for abnormalities. And the key is to look for anything that is going to cause your patient pain, inflammation, infection, loss of tooth, loss of life. And it's okay if you don't know what it is. It's okay to explain to your patient, Mrs. Jones, I see changes in your mouth and I'm concerned. I'm not quite sure what it is. You know, in practicing hygiene, I've seen this, and when we've sent it off for lab analysis, it came back as a fungus, or it came back as trauma, or it came back as, you know, cellular changes, or it came back as something else. Mm-hmm. I don't want to guess. All I want to do is to make sure that I take the best possible care of you, and this is what we're going to do next. And so it's important that for your listeners to understand that, you know, you don't have to know everything. We all want to be perfect. We all want to, you know, give the best possible service we can for our patients. But, you know, I'm sure you've experienced going to a dental office and they're saying, you know, Michael, we're going to do an oral cancer exam on you, or we're going to look for cavities, and we're going to look for this, and you're like, hold on a second. I only want what my insurance covers. And I'm not saying you say this, but as a hygienist and as a consultant in the industry, I hear this all the time. And it's the perception of the public valuing what we do, but in a more nurturing, in a more productive, collaborative way, instead of saying, we're going to look for everything that's wrong in your mouth and tell you. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to tell you that, you know, you need this, this, and this, and then you're going to not understand it, and then you're either going to not keep your appointment, or you're going to defer to whatever your insurance is going to cover, and maybe that's just not good enough for the patient. And so, you know, in my programs and some of the articles that I've written and some of the offices that I consult with, that's the standard that I want to lift people up to. And now having a nonprofit to take it to a broader spectrum, inviting people in to learn about the training that we're doing, and then creating screening opportunities in areas, it's kind of our way to divide and conquer and really change the effect of patients being diagnosed late stage. Because what ultimately happens, and I can tell you with the hundreds of people that I speak with during the week and the emails that I get, the common response to them is this: why didn't somebody tell me?
Yeah.
Or what could I have done to change this? Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult for me because I've already drawn the line in the sand, and I never want to hear that. And that's the mission that I train in the programs that we do and in the lectures that I provide for the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, wow. Yeah, I completely agree with you. What is one marketing technique, tactic, strategy, or plan that you have seen or use in attracting new patients successfully?
Well, you know, not being, unfortunately, a millennium, I kind of missed that by 2 years or so, maybe. But, you know, I think right now everybody is so engrossed in social media and the quick fix. And, you know, I definitely, you know, back in the day, it was all about, you know, who you knew and who could help you expand your platform. Nowadays, it's the instant gratification. I find that doing a video, you know, posting a 30-second video about something that impacted, whether it was my life or a patient's life, or maybe it's even something that I read that, you know, the therapy may not be here in the States yet because I travel internationally so much. I think posting something, allowing people to see your vulnerability, allowing people to hear the tone and the expression in your voice, that really resonates to people in building your brand, building your respect, building your position in the community as an authority in what you're doing. I mean, I am nowhere near people. You know, people say, "Well, you're an expert in this," and I said, "You know what? I'm not an expert. This is what drives me to learn more. I mean, I am a perpetual student. I joke all the time in my program that I'm graduating as a doctor from WebMD next semester, you know, and that next semester never ends because I'm always learning. And, you know, I try to be on the cutting edge of things that are in the industry and vet out any type of product or process or theory that comes out and to share it with people. So I think, you know, doing a video and allowing people to, you know, see the compassion in your eyes and you know, just hear the passion in your heart come through that. I think that's been my most effective and successful way of gaining, I hate to call them clients, but, you know, gaining people that want to partner with me because they have the same desire to elevate what they're doing to the next level or becoming more confident and being part of our energy in a safe environment to be lifted up and gain that confidence.
And what would you recommend the video should be about?
Well, I think anything that really, you know, impacts them. I did a video last year. I you know, for as much as I talk about SOSA screening, which is the 2-day training program that we do, or, you know, any of the other programs that I do, I had a spot on my forehead that I had watched. It didn't go away in 2 weeks, and I'm like, well, you know, what am I going to do? And I'm like, wait a second. If you're talking the talk, you got to walk the walk. Mm-hmm. And I landed up going to 3 different, very well-known dermatologists here in the Palm Beach County area. And you know, one doctor told me, oh, it's nothing. Don't worry about it. You know, you live in Florida. Just wear sunscreen. And I'm like, well, you know what? I do wear sunscreen. It's up at my hairline. So if anybody happens to see what my picture looks like, you'll see I have a nice, healthy Greek head of hair. And so, you know, that wasn't a diagnosis. And, you know, I told him, you know, by looking at it, that's not a diagnosis. So I need to know why that little patch of skin on my forehead, you know, compared to all the other patches of skin that cover my body, you know, hasn't gone back to where, you know, what it looked like before. Mm-hmm. And so I fired him. And then I went to another doctor, which I had to wait a week and a half for. And same thing, they excused it away. And he basically said, you know, you probably burnt it with the curling iron. And I, you know, fired him immediately because I didn't use a curling iron. Don't, you know, typically use a curling iron. And so fired him. And then I landed up calling a friend and I said, I really need to find somebody that's a specialist in dermatology that is going to listen to me. Mm-hmm. And I did. And so I had a consultation and I videotaped actually before I went into the office and I sat in the car and I basically, you know, confessed that I was nervous. You know, here's somebody that people, you know, come to me and respect me as a resource. And I was nervous, you know, I should be nervous, but I was. Mm-hmm. And, this particular doctor was amazing, and she, you know, said, "What are you here for?" And I said, "I have a spot on my body, and I want you to find it." She kind of laughed, and I said, "Well, you know, I do want you to do a full body scan, but in particular, I want you to focus in on my forehead." And And, you know, initially she didn't see what I saw. And I didn't doubt myself because I have complete confidence in knowing what my body should and shouldn't look like. And I pointed it to her and she kind of looked at it and she said, you know what? I really don't think it's anything to be worried about. And I said, well, let me tell you here. I fired two other doctors for saying the same thing. I said, I would prefer if you took a sample of the tissue and just send it off to pathology. I said, that would ease my heart. It's something in my gut is telling me that that's what you need to do. Will you do that for me? And she said, well, yes, I'll do it for you. If it means that much to you, I'll do it for you. And she did. And she said, I don't want you to worry about it. I don't really think it's anything, but whatever it is, I'll let you know. And she actually called me. I was, you know, typically you hear from the office, you know, somebody that says, oh, everything's good, or now you have to come back. She actually called me. And she said, you know what? I would have never believed it. She said, you have basal cell carcinoma. Oh. And I said, wow. And I said, what do we do? And she said, well, you need to come back. We need to remove it. And then you need to have the Mohs procedure, which is, you know, a larger procedure to, you know, bring the skin back together. And it'll probably take a couple hours. And I was like, are you kidding me? The spot is like half the size of a grain. It's like a grain of rice. Mm-hmm. I mean, in my programs, I tell people we're looking for something the size of a sesame seed, poppy seed grain of rice. And I was looking at this grain of rice on my forehead that didn't go away. And then when it was finally diagnosed, the pictures that I posted on the video was the size of a Susan B. Anthony silver dollar.
Oh, wow.
And so, using the video and taking the, you know, I took three videos, you know, when I went in, when the biopsy was done. And of course, you know, they tell you, don't look at it. And Debbie Z goes in the bathroom and takes the Band-Aid off and videotaped it. And, you know, when I videotaped it, I actually went into shock because, and she was banging on the door. That was the really thing when we were videotaping it, you could hear her banging on the door saying, you better not be looking at it. And so, you know, part of the process is, you know, I guess I should have listened, but I didn't. And most of our patients wouldn't listen to us either. But it made me realize, Michael, that, you know, when patients go through that type of diagnosis, being diagnosed with cancer, going and having, you know, something removed that I thought would be like insignificant, landed up being the size of a silver dollar on my forehead. And then going through the emotional impact of, wow, this was serious. If I didn't know what I know, and if I didn't stand for what I stand for, and if I didn't persist with the feeling in my gut, things would have been progressively worse.
Yeah.
And when I went to the surgeon who did the Mohs procedure, who was both of them, I was very blessed to be, you know, introduced to. I asked him. You know, they walk into the room and you see this surgical, like instrument tray, and you're like, okay, it's just a little itty bitty thing. And then you realize that it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I learned from that and we're doing with the National Cancer Network is helping people identify, you know, where are they in that process? Like, I was in shock and, you know, thank goodness I, you know, my priest is my Facebook friend, and he called me and he goes, are you okay? And I said, Father, I'm not. I can't believe this happened to me. Like, I'm stuck emotionally in shock and I need help. And I talked with him, and of course I had an outpouring of people, you know, that reached out to me and helped me through that. But I felt fortunate to have that circle of people. And then I realized, what about the public? What about our patients? Or what about our friends? What about our family? What about our grandparents? What about our kids? What about our neighbors? Like, where do they have that support system? And so I have a great faith in God, and I think that experience, although traumatic and not as, you know, devastating as my friend with cancer, that taught me a lesson, and those lessons are what we're building into the platform of the National Cancer Network in reaching out to people and helping them and referring them to people that can give them the support and the comfort and the answers that they need. and not just to be dismissive about it. And so, you know, I think in everything that we do, if we're vulnerable and open enough to share that experience, we can help a whole lot of people, and that's what we're here for, and that's what my mission is as well.
Yeah, no, and we can get a lot from video, like you said, putting yourself out there. Like, the dentist can really put themselves out there and not just say, this is how a procedure is done, but they can make like a video where it shows a day in the life of someone who with their wisdom teeth taken out, or a day in the life of someone who has dental health issues or dental pain or bad breath, right? And then how you said really stood out, where the actual doctor called you, and that's very important. Yeah. Like if say a patient had a pretty big procedure, like wisdom teeth taken out, or I don't know, root canal, something big to them, to the patient. It's very important that not just the front office or, you know, the receptionist calls, but maybe later on after work, the dentist can call and see, hey, is everything okay? What's going on? And be that support group for them as well. Because they're going to be in pain, or they're going to feel, you know, kind of nervous, but they're going to have a support. They're going to feel supported if the dentist calls. They're going to say, you know what? He really or she really cares.
They really care. Yeah. You know, it's always been my position, and you know, in there's a lot of coaches out there, there's a lot of consultants out there, there's a lot of different organizations that help businesses grow. And what I find is most successful in my business, you know, as a coach, is to really focus in on what's the why that this practice is doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
And do we explain that to our patient? Do our patients actually know why we do what we do? Or do we see a hole and we have to drill, fill, and bill for it? Or do we see a bridge of calculus and the hygienist is going to determine which, you know, end of the instrument that they want to use to remove that? Do we actually explain, you know, the cause of things versus just going into a procedural task-oriented appointment? And patients, you know, it's been, you know, I don't want to say I'm fortunate or I'm lucky or anything, but, you know, I in my experiences as a clinician and also as a practice owner, and as a resource that I am now for a multitude of different business opportunities or educational opportunities, people care how much you care, not how much you know. People want to know that you're going to take care of them in the best possible way. And being honest with the patient and saying, you know what, this is something that I'm concerned about. It didn't happen overnight. We're not going to fix it overnight. There's going to be a financial expense to it. This is how I see we can best make this the best for everybody. Because the diagnosis isn't going to change. Okay, but if we address it right now in our office, we are going to do our best to support you. And just like what you said, having a physician call the patient after a procedure, having, I mean, in my offices, if I'm working with an oral surgeon or a prosthodontist or a general practitioner who's doing implants, and, you know, I say to them, listen, you know, this may be a key thing for everyone on this podcast. You know, why don't you call the patient the night before and just call and ask them, do you have any questions about what we're going to be doing tomorrow? Or do you have any, you know, are you feeling good? You know, that's especially important for patients who are diabetic. You know, do you call your patients who have systemic compromises prior to a dental appointment and say, hey, listen, you know, we have a block of time scheduled for tomorrow. How are you feeling? What's your A1C level? You know, have you eaten well today? You know, ask those kind of questions, and the patient's going to be like, wow, I'm just not another mouth.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And so when we do team trainings, we built in these communication modules where we're becoming more connected with the patient as a patient, not so much as production. Because if the patient turns and says to you, you know what, I can't come in tomorrow, you know, or, you know, they're nervous the night before and they talk to their spouse and the husband's like, listen, if you're not ready, or the wife, if you're not ready, just cancel the appointment. So what do? Wait till 2 o'clock in the morning. So they know that nobody's going to pick the phone up live, and they cancel the appointment.
Yeah.
And then that makes it a bad day for whoever's answering the phone. And it makes it a bad day for whoever's responsible for filling that schedule, because we didn't make that extra step to just reconnect with the patient and reinforce our care of them, not so much the procedure that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I completely agree. What sure. is one marketing strategy, idea, or technique you would never do again, and why?
Again, it has to go with technology, and I think that I know when I first opened my consulting business called Oral Ed Institute, I was bombarded with people who wanted to sell me mailing lists. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did get a mailing list. Thank goodness it was only a 50-mile radius from where I lived. And, you know, constructed this, I thought everybody would hire WZ campaign, and didn't go so well. You know, uh-huh. people didn't know, you know, other than the people who knew me, people, you know, offices and hospitals and chiropractors and you know, other healthcare industries, they didn't know who I was. They didn't know where my position is. They didn't know how I communicated. They couldn't, you know, hear my voice, my inflection. They couldn't hear or grasp the passion that I have behind wanting to help people. And so that failed miserably. I would never do that again.
And so how did you start getting more clients?
Word of mouth, really. I don't do any marketing. Mm-hmm. I haven't done that in a very long time. And, you know, people are, you have to have a website. You have to do this. You have to do that. Well, I put up a website, and it was the same thing as almost the marketing thing. It's very hard to put your emotion down in colors and words.
Oh, yeah.
And so I've had a website up that we're in the process of modifying right now, because I actually found somebody who can put me down mm-hmm. on a website pretty effectively. So my old one's still up. We're building the new one, and I love what the new one is going to stand for. And so, yeah, I think that would be one of the parts. It's still hard. I mean, it's kind of hard to see yourself on a website. It's like, wow,
yeah.
Who are you? You know, I just assume have conversations like this, but majority of everything that I've had an opportunity to do in my career in the past 17, 18 years has been word of mouth.
Awesome. That's amazing. And what's one piece of business advice you received that simplified, accelerated, or completely changed your practice or your client's practice in a positive way?
Well, you're going to be surprised at this answer. Hmm. It's being comfortable saying no, being comfortable knowing when it's not the right fit, you know, not taking every contract, not taking every office that wants you to come and save their practice. I think when we are comfortable in our skill set and we can ask the right open-ended questions, and we can ask, just like we do for our patients, how committed are you once we do A, B, C, and D for you to go home and do what needs to be done?
Mm-hmm.
And when you feel comfortable in having that type of conversation, we also see what their response is, because we have to be accountable.
Mm-hmm.
I can be accountable for my actions and my training. And then the accountability goes back on to maybe the office or the client or the company or the product manager or whoever is handling that particular campaign. So when you can have an honest face-to-face conversation and vet out if it's a good fit, then you're all in. But if you vet out and you feel, well, you know, maybe now's not the time, it's not no, it's just not the right time. I think that is the best way to approach a business plan or to approach collaboration.
If you can tell us maybe like a quick script or an idea, how can dentists get more oral cancer screenings? How can we get more patients to say yes to that?
Well, stop doing oral cancer exams.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's again, maybe not the answer that your audience wants to hear. I mentioned earlier that, you know, for as much science and reading and pictures and examinations that I've done in my brain, I have a Rolodex of what oral lesions look like. But I truly believe that, and again, it's a very strong position that I've taken, that the only responsibility that I have is to identify abnormalities in a patient's mouth. And those abnormalities fall under five tenets that I train in my program. Mm-hmm. Pain, inflammation, infection, loss of tooth, loss of life. And when we can have offices explain what their mission is for that appointment and their commitment to patients' overall health and wellness, the patient will understand that you're not looking for something that could potentially scare the bejesus out of them.
Yeah.
Or get those typical responses. I mean, hygienists tell me across the country, you know, I want to do an oral cancer exam. I want you to train me how to do it. You're the expert. And I said, well, no, I'm not the expert on oral cancer exams. I may be proficient and confident in my skills for looking for abnormalities, and the program is called SOSA, Screening for Oral and Skin Abnormalities, mm-hmm. and I can train you to that. But the only person truly qualified to do a cancer exam, whether it's on the skin, behind two lips, or on my forehead, is a pathologist. Mm-hmm. Our job is to triage that patient to qualify that referral.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So to outsource it, pretty much. So just to figure out, hey, something's wrong, and then let them do it. And if they don't want to do it, then I guess don't do it, right?
Well, you know, the responsibility is this, you know, changing the words that you use. Mrs. Jones, we don't do oral cancer exams in our office. Our commitment is to make sure that you live a healthy, pain-free life. And in order for us to do that, we have to do certain assessments. You know, we're going to be looking for anything in your mouth that would cause you pain, inflammation, infection, loss of tooth, loss of life. And we're going to tell you about that. Is that okay? See, we kind of force ourselves onto our patients by saying we're going to do this, this, and this. But if we explain that simple sentence that I just said, your patient's going to be like, wow, like, why? Aren't I going to get my teeth cleaned? If you qualify, I hate the word clean,
yeah.
If you qualify for a healthy mouth procedure, then yes, that we can certainly do. But if I see something that I'm concerned, I'm pointing to my eye, changes, I'm pointing to my mouth, I'm concerned, I'm pointing to my heart. If we explain this to the patient, they're going to say, Deb, what are you concerned about? Well, the last time you were here, I didn't see in my examination this white patch.
Gotcha.
Can you tell me, have you noticed it? And the patient's going to be like, well, where? And then I'll show. And I just did this a week and a half ago in an office that I was working with. And the patient came in and I went in and, you know, we role played so they could see how I do it and they could get more comfortable with, untraining themselves of what they have been doing in the past or maybe what they haven't been doing but want to do now.
Mm-hmm.
And explaining to the patient, you know, why is a white patch concerning to me? And again, in the training, I teach people to go back to what's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Remember what healthy looks like? Healthy looks like the inside of a baby's mouth.
Yeah.
If it doesn't look like the inside of a baby's mouth, we need to find out why. And then we go through a whole list of questions, which we, again, train in the course, and empower the patient to be, you know, looking in their mouth as well, but also remembering that, you know, in between visits, they're responsible for maintaining what goes on. So, you know, to your question is, you know, stop doing things that you don't feel comfortable. Stop, you know, talking about doing a cancer exam and really think about what your mission is in your office. And in our office, and anyone in your audience can certainly take this, our mission in our office, Mrs. Jones, is to find any red flag that will cause you pain, inflammation, infection, loss of tooth, loss of life.
Okay, Debbie, thank you so much for being with us today. It was a pleasure. But before we say goodbye, tell us where it is we can find you.
Well, oh, thank you. I certainly appreciate that. My phone number is area code 561 down here in South Florida, 561-358-7660. My email address is debbiez@debbiezrdh.com.
Okay.
New website's coming up, but it's certainly there. And, of course, that's my website address as well. And if I could help anybody in your audience or somebody that, may come across you, please, it would be an honor and pleasure to partner up with them and share whatever I can that resonates with them. Thank you. And don't forget to mention the National Cancer Network. Please go on our website. Take a look at our website. We've got a great event coming up in April in Philadelphia. That event flyer is going to be posted by the end of this week, which is, I think, Friday the 14th. It's supposed to go up and live. And, of course, I'll be doing videos about it. So definitely take a look at the nationalcancernetwork.org. And if you're so compelled to help support our efforts by a donation, it is tax deductible, and you can certainly use that advantage as well. But thank you so much. I know I just wanted to add that in before we let go, because that certainly is our focus in helping a broad amount of people.
Okay. No, yeah, that's amazing. Excellent. Okay. Awesome, Debbie. Thank you for joining us today on today's episode, and we'll hear from you soon, okay?
Take care. Thanks again, and best of luck to you as well.
Dental Marketer Tribe, thank you guys so much for tuning in into this episode. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Thank you guys so much for always supporting this podcast, for helping it grow, for sharing it. Thank you guys. Also, don't forget to check out the nationalcancernetwork.org. And also, follow me on Instagram. I provide tips and tutorials on how you can attract new patients and better market your dental practice. Go ahead and like the Facebook page as well. It's under The Dental Marketer. And guys, I'll talk to you soon.